Hello and welcome to Socially Awkward Podcast. I am your host, Calvin Tiloki, and I am here with the CEO of Pinnacle, the former CMO of Expedia, and industry icon, Melissa Mayer.
Hello, Calvin. Very, very nice to be with you today.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. Before we get into your intro and background, you know, I have to always tell this embarrassing story about how I was fangirling over seeing you in my hotel lobby a few years ago. So I had only seen Melissa, only seen you at Expedia conferences at Explore. And I think at that point, I'd maybe been to about five of them. And you were just this face I always saw from stage. I never even bumped into you at the parties or anything, you know. And you would, I would see you hanging out with kind of the executives at the company I was working with. But I never got close enough to say hello or anything like that. And I walk into my lobby in a hotel in New York City, and Melissa's just sitting there in the lobby. And I'm like, oh, do I say something? Is she going to think I'm strange? And, you know, thankfully, none of those things happened. I got up enough nerve to go and ask, are you Melissa Mayer?
Go, yeah.
And, you know, we took a nice selfie, and here we are. Maybe it was that 5-6 years ago.
And you did a fabulous hotel tour, the guest room.
Yes.
Which.
Yes.
And
yeah, we can mention that. That was fun. It's one of the coolest things I've ever been involved in my career. So we did a partnership with hotels.com. It was called the Bed and Breakfast Room. And we basically did this around the social media holiday. That Quitter's Day, I believe they call it. It's like January 17th when everybody just kind of bails on their New Year's resolutions. And this room was exactly what you think. It was bread all over the place. There were donuts hanging from the wall, bagels in the bathroom, the wallpaper. They came in and did a great job. And we had a few influencers stay there. But Melissa got the tour, being that she was CMO of the company at the time. Said, you should probably want to see this.
It was so great. I loved it. It was so creative. And I love the fact that you introduced yourself and we got to obviously start our friendship from there. So very,
yes.
Very good to meet you back then, but still stay connected with you now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you never know what can come out of shooting your shot, as the kids say these days, you know? So yeah, I appreciate you not thinking I was a weirdo and indulging me. So
of course.
And yeah, so fast forward, here we are. I think that was 6 years ago, right? Yeah. That's 2019.
Yes.
And I'm like, wow. So so fast forward, yeah. You know, we are both running our own companies, which is exciting. But let's backtrack for those in the audience who don't know who you are. Tell us a little bit about how you got your career started in hospitality and what initially drew you to the industry.
Absolutely. You know, I've always loved travel, and I feel like everybody in travel says that. Mm. And for me, it's about the people, but also about the experiences and traveling and learning new cultures and meeting new people. And when I graduated from high school in Indiana, I went across the country and started hospitality school at UNLV in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And that was really my first kind of entree into hospitality. Before I started there, I met the dean, and that's really what sold me on hospitality.
Okay.
And loved it ever since. I, you know, did a lot of internships while I was at UNLV, getting practical experience, but also getting the, you know, the book experience. And it was just a really nice combination. So loved being in hospitality way back then. And it's actually the only industry I've ever been in. So I'm a diehard in travel and hospitality. Just absolutely love it.
Yeah. You know, you and I actually have that in common. I've only ever worked in hospitality as well.
Love it.
And yeah, you know, you mentioned internships, which I think is a critical part of, you know, of my development, but you mentioned that. What sort of internships did you do, and which one was your favorite or least favorite? Actually, that's a good one too.
it's a good question. I like that twist. I did. So when I was at UNLV, you had to do an internship, but you also had to have practical hours of experience. So I was at the Courtyard by Marriott, and I was working at the front desk. So that was my full-time or part-time job while I was going to school. And then I did an internship at the Residence Inn. And the internship was by far the best experience to really get a taste of what it's really like. And I did a rotation where I worked in all the different departments. And the one that really stood out to me was the stint that I did in hospitality, or excuse me, in housekeeping for the hospitality internship. And I wasn't sure what path I was going to go into. I always wanted to be in the front of the house, but being in the housekeeping department was really interesting to me because I truly believe it is the hub and the heart of a hotel. And it's a lot of the places that, you know, guests don't see or students don't see a lot of, but it really taught me about hospitality, and it taught me about, you know, behind the scenes roles and how hotels really operate with the full front of the house and the full back of the house. But it was a great experience. Loved the people. Decided to go into the front of the house after that because it is a really hard job in housekeeping. So hats off to all those housekeeping folks out there. But great experience.
Absolutely. I mean, just to comment on that last point, I'm not sure front of the house is better. I started at front of the house, and you either get beat up by dirt in housekeeping or by people in front of the
Yes.
house. Either way, you're getting beat up. It's not glamorous at all. But no, absolutely.
It's funny. When I was at the front desk, I remember I'm sure you had this a lot. I remember the first time I had to walk a guest, and it was such a
Really?
horrifying experience. And I look back at it today, and I was so nervous, but it really taught me a lot about people and a lot about service and good service versus bad service. But that was one of my memories. Did you ever have to walk anyone?
Absolutely. So I like you, I did an internship at a few hotels. But so my first job was at a Hilton in Westchester County, New York. And I graduated in December. So I interned that summer leading into that. And that was my first experience actually working at a real hotel. We had a small hotel, my college campus. It was like 20 rooms. So, it's never that busy. But this was a 470 room property, I think, or something like that, with event space. It had the biggest ballroom in Westchester. So it's busy. And I've had to walk many a guest. One situation I remember, this wasn't actually a walk, but I remember we had you've heard of like the Prince Hall Masons, those Masonic groups. So we had a group that would they buy out the hotel every year, sometime in June, and they had the entire building. So as the res manager, I had to, you're going to love this. This is how far back we're going. Everybody had to leave a deposit for their room. And they would either call in with a credit card, which I'd have to run in the system, or they'd mail in a registration form with a card or a check or a money order. And I had to keep this all straight. So I've got a binder this thick by the day of arrival. And it was just a constant fight because, people are like, oh no, I booked the king, and I have to take the book and go, phew, phew, phew. Is this your registration card, sir? Yeah, but I could have swore next. But walking in that market was tough because the hotels are fairly spread out. The next closest hotel was in White Plains. This hotel was in Rye, so you're talking maybe a 10 to 15 minute drive. And if that person's showing up late or for flight or something like that, and you've got to send them back out in the dark, it's not fun. But I would, it helped me be a better revenue manager, for sure. That was one thing that my team could never say. Oh, you don't know what it feels like. Oh, I do. I'll come out here and do it with you if you want. I've done this many times, but like most revenue managers, we do our time in ops and we get the heck out. That's the smart way to do hospitality.
Right, exactly. Do your time and get out.
Exactly. And you started out in sales roles, and then moved into Expedia. You know, sales is the golden goose. You know, you guys don't do any work according to most of the industry, and 90% of my memes, admittedly.
Yes, I've seen those. That's not true.
You know, I mean, we all know it's all about, you know, going out to lunch and having margaritas and, you know, happy hours. But in those moments where you actually were forced to do some work, what was that role like, and how was it transitioning from a hotel sales role into Expedia?
Yeah, it was great. I loved being in sales and, you know, selling that. I started in sales at the Las Vegas Hilton, and a lot of tours, a lot of groups, from leisure groups to corporate groups. And it was always fun to me to meet the people, see why they were coming to Las Vegas, why the Hilton, and just experience that. And I loved also forming partnerships. That was kind of the start of how I got into really focusing on relationships and partnerships at work, because so much happens when you have those strong partnerships. And so I was at the Las Vegas Hilton, mainly in leisure sales. Then I moved to Bally's in Paris, Las Vegas, more in corporate sales. And my transition into Expedia was actually funny. Expedia was my client. And and had a fabulous relationship with them. I loved their culture. I loved everything about what they were doing. And so I started talking about them, or talking to them about going into work for them. And what was interesting is at the time I was just basically one hotel. And so when I was talking to Expedia about managing multiple hotels, that was really intriguing to me. So getting to see kind of the trends of the market, what, you know, the different things that were happening, the different reasons people were booking, where they were booking. And then to be fair, that was a long time ago when I started Expedia, but the other interesting thing was this new thing was happening called the internet, and it felt like online sales might be a thing. They might make it. So they lured me away, and I started in Expedia and was there for 2 decades. But the combination of the people and the technology was really what lured me, and that whole sales and partnership angle kind of stayed with me all the way through.
Yeah, and you know, I've been in the industry long enough to remember when Expedia was just this extra net that you threw some extra rooms on
Right.
at the end of the night, right? Nobody really thought at that time that it was going to grow into the largest travel company on the planet, and be such a critical part of any hotel. Was that something that you could feel when you started with them, that it was going to grow to this extent?
I did. There was something magical about the leadership, about the organization and the pace that they moved at, and about risks that they would take, or we, I should say. It was really fast-paced, and it was, you know, if someone had a good idea, whether it was the president, whether it was someone in the call center, we would just test it and see what worked. And that sort of agile thinking was really interesting. I think the other thing is, when I first started, there were more sales offline than online. And I remember the day that the online sales took over the call center sales or offline sales. And it was that day where I remember, okay, this is taking off. People are trusting the internet. They're trusting putting their, you know, credit card down, which now we don't think a thing about, but people then were concerned about that. But it was really something magical. And then our partnership started growing, the inventory started growing. When I started, Las Vegas was our top. I was managing Las Vegas, and it was our top market, but you could see the other markets, New York and Chicago and LA and European markets, you could see them expanding. So I just knew it was going to continue to grow and expand with the technology and the leadership and the agile thinking that the company had.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, it's incredible to kind of hear that story from the inside, you know, because, you know, being on the revenue side most of my career, and like I said, when I first heard about it, I was in reservations, at that same Hilton, and it was like, oh, Expedia, and you know, maybe I'd have to upload a couple rooms and an extranet, and I don't think at that point anybody realized what was bubbling under the surface, you know. We certainly didn't, you know, on the hotel side, we certainly didn't predict it, because we wouldn't be giving away 30% of the business right now to Expedia. And you know, it's just kind of funny to watch that happen, and you know, and hear it from the other side, where like, yeah, we told you, we knew this was coming, you guys didn't listen. But going, you know, fast forwarding into, you know, you said you spent a couple decades at Expedia, and now you're the CEO of your own company, Pinnacle Enterprises Group. What inspired you to take the leap to be an entrepreneur? Because that's not a it's not an easy thing to do, as glamorous as it looks from the outside. It's not an easy thing to do. So, you know, kind of leaving the nest, so to speak. What inspired you to want to do that?
Entrepreneurship is in my family, and I've always thought about it. But after being with Expedia for over 2 decades, pretty much most of my career, I knew I was ready for the next thing. I loved every minute of Expedia, but I knew there was a new chapter for me. And I knew that all through my career at Expedia and before Expedia, one of my actually, two of my big loves were developing people and really helping leaders grow and develop. And then the other area that I always loved and still love is helping people or helping companies with their strategy, creating, executing. And so if I think about those two things and the time I had been at Expedia, I thought, why not take my experience in corporate America at Expedia, my love for developing people, my love for creating strategy, and create my own company. And I took a little bit of time off in between and tried to just decompress a little bit and really figure out what was next. And as I was thinking about that, I kept coming back to developing people and creating strategies. And so I started my own company, and it was a few years ago, and I absolutely love it. Would never take back my corporate experience, and I have a lot of clients. They're in corporate America, so I still have a foot in there. But I also spend a lot of time with entrepreneurs and startup leaders, and have kind of a variety now. So I've kind of, taken my corporate experience and expanded beyond that. So it's been quite fun, minus the lack of IT support that I had at Expedia or at the Hilton,
For sure.
as you probably know.
Yeah, now you have to submit a ticket for yourself. You know,
Exactly.
you're asking yourself, what, have you submitted a ticket? Did you turn it off and turn it back on?
I was just going to say, that's it, turn it off. I used to make fun of IT. Now I do. That's the first thing I do, turn it off.
So tell us a little bit more about the company, exactly what Pinnacle does.
Sure, absolutely. So we do a couple of things, one-on-one leadership and executive coaching. And then, so I do that. And then we actually started leadership development cohorts where we have 10 to 12 people in a leadership development cohort. We actually have three different cohorts. One is called Executive Essentials, and it is focused on some of those critical skills, essential skills that a lot of times you don't learn on the job. So, executive presence, building your personal brand, developing your confidence, influencing and negotiating. So, of that, then I have an advanced version for more senior leaders. And then I also do a public speaking workshop that is a 4-week program. So, those are the three programs. And it's, over Zoom, so it is, you don't have to do anything but put on a shirt, you can still wear your pajama bottoms, and you're in a cohort of kind of like-minded people. So the leaders going through the program are learning not only from me and my experience, but also from other leaders around them. So it's a really nice, magical formula. So that, and then I also do consulting on a variety of things, but mainly what's in my wheelhouse. So marketing, OTA strategy, leadership development, and some of those things. Strategy sessions, that's one of the things I do a lot for companies with their leadership teams. So yeah, so it's been great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, a lot of what you're describing, I would classify as the soft skills, right? Of moving up the chain. And listen, but I could do a whole other podcast of people that I've had to work for and with that had possessed zero of these skills, but these are equally as, if not more important than knowing your job, because if people don't want to work with you or for you, doesn't matter how smart you are at the work, but yeah, I kind of wanted to get your words on that. You mentioned personal branding and executive presence. Why do you feel that these are crucial for today's leaders?
I think they're crucial because it's stuff that you don't learn on the job. There are very few times when a company will actually help train on these things. And if you don't have executive presence, it's hard to stand out. It's hard to be heard. It's a competitive landscape. It's a crowded landscape. And so it's really important for when people are delivering a pitch or a business case that they have that presence, they have that confidence, that someone on the other end understands what they're saying. Crisp communication, those types of things. A lot of times, again, you don't learn those from your boss. So that's really why I focus on those soft skills, which I call them critical because I do think sometimes they are more important than other skills that you learn on the job. Because it's, developing trust, building those relationships, having those partnerships, that emotional intelligence, that's all something that, humans need to work on no matter what role or what company they're in. So that's really why I've focused on those areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Super important. I mean, so many examples run through my mind as you're talking about that, and I think a lot of times it's you don't know what you don't know is what it comes down to. People, we don't get, like you said, we don't get that training at work. They just teach you how to do the job. And a lot of times you've got to figure that out on your own. If you don't have, not a person who has a high EQ or has innate ability to work with people and have some of these skills, you might find yourself getting passed over and you realize, well, why? I know the job, I know the work. And why am I getting passed over? Because you can't lead, or nobody wants to have in a leadership position. But where do you learn it? So I think what you're providing is very, very crucial.
It's really interesting when leaders will go through my workshops or my courses, it's a lot of reflective time. And what happens is people don't spend time on themselves. So this gives them an opportunity to really think about how they can grow their confidence, how they can help with that pitch, how they can, get that extra headcount if that's what they're pitching. But it allows them to kind of sit back and think about it. And a lot of it is just practical experience, practical tips that I've learned along the way, either from my leaders, from other leaders, and really just observe people. But it's been really good. I've had some really good successes that have come out of it, and something that I'm going to continue doing, men and women. And again, a lot of the leaders are hospitality, but I do have some that join the programs that are not in hospitality, but the bulk is hospitality, which is other.
Yeah, well, you mentioned you've had some successes so far. Any that stand out? Any kind of moments where you're like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing now?
Yes, I have a lot of those when a course is done and someone sends me a thank you and talks about a success moment they had, it's just, you know, it's really rewarding to me. It's, you know, when I was at Expedia, I would negotiate contracts all day long. And that was great. But this personal stories and success stories, it really makes me excited. I had a client the other day that she was working on a presentation, and I helped her with the presentation. She practiced, and if something as simple as her boss came up to her after the presentation and said, "That is the absolute best presentation that you've ever done." As a result, she got what she was presenting on the business case. And something that simple that I can help leaders, you know, accomplish and make them feel good, help them shine, is a great example. I've seen people who have gotten promoted, people who have decided to change careers, people who their confidence has increased. You know, a lot of times as leaders, our confidence just isn't there. If it's something we haven't tried before or something we've tried and we failed at. So, you know, helping people with, you know, building their confidence is always fun as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Love to hear it. So maybe going back to a little bit of your time at Expedia, but also currently promoting Pinnacle, what marketing strategies have you implemented that you saw that proved most effective in driving growth or engagement and just raising the overall level?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll start with Expedia. So I was the CMO on the B2B side, and that role and that function was about working with our partners to help their visibility on our sites, to help them grow their revenue, you know, really to help them be more successful. That was one of the areas. And for that, it was, you know, I won't bore you with, you know, systems and processes and all that, but I think the main thing that worked was having data and being able to use the data and do that in a way where you can mix it with storytelling. Because whether you're a hotel that wants to get more revenue or whether you're a consumer that wants to have the perfect stay, if the data is there, then you're more, you know, compelled to make a move. But if it's told to you in a personalized storytelling way where you're emotionally connected, that's really what works. And so I think the combination of data and storytelling was certainly the most effective, again, with that emotional connection and that relevancy, that emotional connection and relevancy.
Right, right. Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there with storytelling. You know, everything, all the best marketing is done that way, you know. Even just, you know, going back to the old word of mouth, it's a person telling a story about what they experienced.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, with marketing now is the ever evolving industry, and you know, finding different ways to reach people. How do you see the role of marketing evolving going forward, especially now with all the personalized marketing that you get, and as you mentioned, that in data-driven decision making?
I think personalization has definitely gotten better. I think with AI and better tools, it will continue to get better. But I really think that's where it's got to be, is the personalization. And you know, the other thing when I think about marketing in today's world is you can't forget social, as you know better than anyone. I think social is really, you know, over the last couple of years has really moved the needle. You know, 10 years ago, people would never buy a trip on Instagram or would never buy anything from TikTok. And now, you know, you don't think a thing about it or researching in that area. So I think the rise of social, the rise of AI and personalization being critical and getting more personal. I think companies have moved the needle in personalization, but I think there needs to be more personalization, more relevancy, not just in hospitality, but in general.
Right, right. Did have another question about technology before we get into some some of the things you're doing outside of your company. Technology is something that, I've been in the industry a while, and you were on the tech side, tech slash travel. Probably, as we kind of mentioned before, probably took hotels a little too long to adapt. And I'm on record as saying hospitality just reacts very slow to a lot of trends, technology being right there at the top. How do you foresee technology being integrated into the hospitality industry and affecting the customer experience going forward?
I think you're right. It is slow to move. That's actually one of the reasons I left corporate America, is because it tends to move pretty slow. So I think the mindset around technology definitely needs to improve. In my opinion, companies need to try more technology and try some smaller technologies and really kind of test and see how they can improve their efficiencies or their revenue or whatever the metric is that they're looking at. What I've seen is AI, I think, is making a big impact, but are hotel companies using it enough in the right business cases? A lot of companies right now seem to be using it for content and some cost savings. Where I'd love to see is how do companies use it more for revenue growth and really think about, enhanced customer experiences and better unique trips and offers to consumers. So I think the mindset is changing, but if we look at hospitality compared to other industries, it's not changing fast enough. And I think the industry has a lot to gain from some of these enhanced technologies and even some of these smaller players that are coming out with very niche technology that's easy to adapt, easy to integrate. I'd love to see the hotel community testing those more.
Absolutely. I think you hit it on the head. It's just we're just behind the rest of society is really what it comes down to. Everyone, I always talk about having to sign a reg card still at check-in. I haven't been to a bank in years. I get checks, I scan it on my phone, it goes into my account, and this technology exists. And then you go to a hotel and it's like, oh, please sign here and initial next to your rate and swipe your credit card. And it's like, this, we know that there's faster way to do this. We're not even saying, oh, there has to be. We know that there is. It's like, why are we not adopting this? Because these are the same people that live outside of hotels. You go spend your whole, oh, I'll book a train ticket on my phone, a plane ticket, I'll, get money out, virtually, all these different things. And then you go back into the 80s as soon as you step into a hotel lobby.
Exactly. The reg cards or, keyless check-in has still not really taken off. Or, you look at the airline industry. Keyless check-in has been a thing for, decades. But very, very interesting. I hope that hotel companies will start to embrace it. I know some are, but I'd love to see it in a much more meaningful way.
Absolutely. So while you were at Expedia, you were a big part of, championing diversity within the company, part of an organization called Women in Travel Thrive, which it's big part of the Expedia network. So how do you continue to do that in your car? You run your own company, so you got to run your own DEI initiatives, as well as your marketing, as well as your IT.
Finance, you name it.
But how do you continue to do that in your current role?
Absolutely. When I was at Expedia, I was actually Expedia's first chief inclusion officer. And so that was about exploring, listening, learning, putting in programs, and thinking about diversity. And I think there's no argument that diverse teams are more productive. They make more money. I mean, I think people know the stats. So I carry that into my current practice, where I think about the leaders that I work with. I think about the leaders that come through my program and really thinking about even just the cohorts. Are they made up of diverse leaders? Whether it's race, whether it's location they're based, whether it's company, diversity always plays a factor because it just makes for a better experience for everyone. I've also created a program last year called Pinnacle Pay It Forward Program. I'm a massive believer in paying it forward and helping leaders. And so for each of my courses, I have a nomination process where I can have people nominate either a woman or a person of color to come into the class, one of my classes of their choice on a complimentary basis. And that's just my small way of giving back. So I do that. And then, as you said, I'm an advisor for Women in Travel Thrive. I'm part of Female Founders in Hospitality. I believe in having those conversations that help lift up women, that help lift up people from underrepresented communities, because I think that's incredibly important. But I also think I want to make sure that we don't alienate the men, because the men are part of the conversation. So when I started at Expedia in the chief inclusion officer role, I made a very deliberate effort to bring the men along in the conversation so that, you know, they would understand why it matters and why diverse teams are more productive and make more revenue. So it's absolutely in my blood, part of, you know, giving back, part of helping lift and really helping educate.
Right. Absolutely. It's fantastic. And I love what you said about, you know, diversity looking different ways, you know, people from different locations, is diversity. You know, I remember seeing seeing a post on social media years ago, and this person was on a flight somewhere, I think it was like Norway, and, you know, and they took a picture of everyone, all the passengers, and they all looked the same, you know, blonde hair, blue eyed. And it was like, oh, what a diverse, you know, set of passengers. And I was happy to see that people in the comments were like, imagine thinking diversity was only skin deep. You know what I mean? All these people come from different places. You know, they live in different areas. They have different life experiences. Diversity is not just about, you know, the color of your skin or your gender or any of these other things. So,
absolutely. And, you know, I have a class right now, and I have several leaders from the US, but I have someone from Dubai, someone from London, someone from Spain. And even, you know, even having the culture conversations is, you know, is interesting. So diversity from all aspects is important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're going to give you opportunity to look back over your illustrious career and, you know, pull out some gems for us, because we're going to wrap up here another couple questions. So we want to leave the audience with some key takeaways. But as you look back over, you know, all of your many experiences, what were some of the most significant challenges that you faced, and how do you feel that they contributed to your growth?
I would say, as a young leader, probably the biggest challenge for me was learning to speak up and learning to grow my voice. And, you know, a lot of times there, I would have the answer in my head, but I would be too nervous to speak up.
Right.
Or I would wait until the meeting was over, and then I would pull my boss aside. So I think, looking back, had I used my voice a lot more and had more confidence, that would have been important to me. And so I tell a lot of young leaders that today. One of the things that I did from really young in my career was develop my network. And that is something I always give people advice, you know, no matter where you are, think about your network, and don't wait until you need a job. Think about your network all the time. You know, whether you're at a cocktail party, whether you're at an airplane, whether you're at a conference, you know, really figure out how you develop your network. And I always tell people to also develop their posse, you know, who are their 3 to 5 close people they can confide in. Because that I think is incredibly important. You've got to have that group of people that will lift you up, but will also tell you the truth, that will be,
Right.
you know, your support system when you're, you know, in a great time, when you're in a horrible time. So really, developing your network and really developing that smaller posse are things that are important to me and that I always give advice to today. And I think the other one, you hear this a lot from people, but I believe it, it's take risks. You know, when you're young,
Yeah.
you're nervous to jump around. And I think the more you take risks, take on a high profile assignment, do something cross-functionally where you meet other leaders in an organization or another organization is also really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been a fantastic interview with tons of gems. I know that the audience has got a lot out of this. Tell us where, well, tell the audience, I know where to find you because I've got you here on the show, so I know where to locate you. yeah, tell the audience where they can find you, connect with you, and hear more of this fantastic advice.
Yes, of course. I can be found on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn, so you can certainly find me there. Or my website is pinnacleenterprisesgroup.com. Kind of a long URL. As a new entrepreneur, I wanted the name. I didn't think about the URL being super long and hard to type in, but
Yes.
pinnacleenterprisesgroup.com and or Melissa at pinnacleenterprisesgroup is my .com is my email.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Any final words of wisdom before we let the audience go on with the rest of their day?
Oh, that's a hard one. Final words of wisdom. Follow you and Socially Awkward. Follow me at Pinnacle Enterprises Group. No, seriously. You know, be in, try in hospitality, try new things, meet new people, use your voice, use your network. And I think all of that based on your experience will help you be happy and successful in your career. So simple advice, but we should all do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. The simplest things are not always easy.
True. Yes.
But
Yep.
well, Melissa, it has been fantastic. Great having you on the show. I got a lot out of this. I know the audience will as well. So thank you for joining us, and we will see you on the next one.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me, Calvin.